Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello, and welcome to the Sky U Podcast by the Daily Gopher. I'm Chris, Go AU Fur. With me this week is Andy, Gopher Guy 05.
Hello, hello.
And Ustreet.
Hey, y'all.
All right, so short hiatus for us, but we are back. We've got some good stuff to talk about, what with the spring game, an extension for Coach Pitino, and the hunt for grad transfer basketball players continues. Additionally, I believe softball is still good. Andy, is softball still good?
That is a positive, yes. Softball is still good.
Sweet. All right, so we get to find out why softball is still good. Spring game. Street, I'm going to turn it over to you since I think you were the only one who watched the entire thing.
Andy also watched it and wrote the article, but I did watch the entire thing. I was our intrepid reporter to start with.
I want to be abundantly clear. I actually thought that Street wrote the article. Like, I literally didn't read the byline on it.
Well, it's good to know that you are not the only man. You are another managing editor who does not actually read our blog.
I'd like to say something right now, but I don't want whoever ends up editing this to have to check the explicit box, so I won't.
Yep. Okay, well...
We can start with me, though. What would you like to know about the spring game?
Who are we supposed to anoint as the new savior based solely on, like, two plays?
I assume Jacob Clark, since I think he only had two passes, one of which was like a 60-yard touchdown.
Okay, based on that, Jacob Clark is winning the Heisman. Is that correct?
I not just the Heisman, also the Davey O'Brien winner and the Ray Guy Award, because in the Big Ten, you're nothing if you don't also win the Punter of the Year.
I mean, he could be really good at the quick kick.
Certainly plausible. Jacob Herbers looked good again. The actual kicking game is... interesting. I think it was Brock Walker, Andy? What's the walk-on kicker's name?
Yeah, that'd be Brock Walker from Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Yeah, he missed a chipper, so that wasn't great. Otherwise, I think it was a pretty normal spring game. It was positive. They scored some points. Nobody got injured. Neither quarterback did enough to say that's obviously the starter going into the fall. Both of them had interceptions. Anix Day was because Clay Geary did not have strong enough hands. And so I think it was Coney Durr made a good play. And then Tanner Morgan, I'm still unclear as to what he was looking at. I think he forgot what team he was briefly playing for and threw a pass directly to Thomas Rush, who returned it for a touchdown. Rashad Bateman spent most of the day beating whatever defensive back was put on him, which is very exciting. Tyler Johnson seemed to have been on the field for about three plays, promptly caught a pass, and then immediately got off the field as to not get injured. Otherwise, Terrell Smith had an end-around on offense because every running back was injured. Daniel Fa'alele had a touchdown, and it was awesome, and I'm super excited for the read option inverted veer package with Seth Green and Daniel Fa'alele.
So you made one factual error in your commentary that I actually caught enough of the spring game tweets to be able to correct. That interception was not Durr, it was Howden.
Ah, I'm sorry, Jordan. That's my bad. It was a really good play by Jordan Howden to rip the ball and move forward on the play. It was not a tremendously well-thrown pass by Zach Anixted, though, as poor as that pass was, it was a bit behind the receiver. The receiver should have caught it, and it was nowhere near as bad as Tanner Morgan's interception. I think, like every spring game, this is definitely one, and Andy may or may not agree. I'm not sure. He wrote an article that I may or may not have read that this spring game is basically whatever you thought going in is exactly what you think going out.
Yeah, you know, I'd sort of agree with that. I think... I think to sort of double down on that. It really sort of emphasized the points that we all agreed on and didn't bring up any major questions. I think, you know, mostly rationally but slightly irrationally, we're getting giddy at the thought of our wide receiver group going into next season, and nothing that Rashad Bateman and or Tyler Johnson did had any effect to dampen that at all. Legitimately, the Gopher probably have their best 1-2 receiver punch in, God, I can't even think how long. Probably Ron Johnson and whoever Ron Johnson's...
Maybe Eric Decker. Did Logan Payne overlap with Eric Decker?
No, Payne was before Decker. Decker. That's why Decker was so good, is Decker was on an island and Weber literally did not throw to anybody but Eric Decker for 3 years.
Do we have Ernie and Decker together at all?
Maybe that is a freshman. Maybe, yeah.
So that might be the if that overlapped, that would be the last time, and that would still be a stretch for the because obviously Decker's clearly, you know, up there. But as a twosome, that would be a stretch because this Ernie Wheelwright was not the greatest at all times.
Yeah, there's also a reasonably good argument to be made that our 1-2 should be drafted. Whether or not they be drafted at a high round is an open question. But the fact is both of them are NFL caliber wide receivers. And depending on how you look at it, either Chris Autman-Bell or Demetrius Douglas is your third or fourth option. Both of them showed plenty of signs last year of being a excellent third option. Chris Autman-Bell in particular on those kind of deep routes. So especially the kind of read option that seems to have a tag, the go tag, and if Autman-Bell gets open, you just bomb it to him, did well. So the receiving core is going to look pretty good. I'm still not totally sure yet if they've got a quarterback to actually pass it to them, but that's a much better problem, I suppose, in some level than the receiving core is terrible and they don't have a quarterback who can pass it to them.
So do we buy that the tight ends are actually going to be in the passing game this year? Because they seemed, based on, you know, what I saw on Twitter and what I now acknowledge was Andy's article, to have been more active in the offense, at least for the spring game.
You know, I think they've been hyping up that, or at least the people that sort of presume to have knowledge of that have been hyping up that Kurt Schrock has been wanting to get the tight ends more involved, especially as we add a couple of downfield threats. And you saw that a little bit in the bowl game, as well, where they went to Jake Paulson a little bit more. I think they really want to get Brevin Spanford into the action this fall. You know, they preserved his redshirt last year, so he'll come in as a redshirt freshman, and he's basically your receiver / tight end. He's got a receiver type body, but you know, can play inside as well. And I think they'll look up the middle of the field for him quite a few times here this fall. You know, it'll be interesting to see, because each of the three Gopher tight ends who are going to play a lot all sort of have their own individual roles. They don't, you know, overlap much. Spanford is definitely going to be your pass catcher. Paulson might be more of your, you know, he can do a little bit of A, a little B, and then obviously when Kokeeft is in the game, he's pretty much your blocker H-back type. He's not going to be really the guy who's going to end up going deep for a pass or anything like that. So it'll be interesting to see as we get more into the fall exactly how they mix up those positional groups and matchups and try and take advantage of one another. You know, going back to the quarterbacks, like we said, you know, nothing obviously was solved. You've got Morgan looked decent at times. You had Anixed looked decent at times. Anixed maybe a little more success with the deep ball. Morgan was maybe a little bit more accurate on the intermediate routes. You know, I think it's honestly going to come to be, you know, mid-August decision before PJ makes a decision on this. They both have their faults. They both have their positives. You know, I don't think anybody wants to hear it. I think somebody really wants somebody to take the reins and run with it. But I wouldn't be half surprised if we see a lot of them sort of splitting action again here this fall. But you know, and one more big positive. At least offensively, before we can go to the defense a little bit more. But I don't think there's any doubt, again, the spring game sort of reinforcing things we already know, but Muhammad Ibrahim is the best third-string running back in the country, bar none.
Is he even third-string at this point, like, given that both of the other supposed first and second strings are coming back off of injury?
Well, you know, I mean, I guess that'll be something we'll have to see, but supposedly everybody says that both Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks are going to be back 100% by midsummer and ready for fall camp. So, you know, I honestly think it's a crapshoot to see how they split up the carries this fall. I think Rodney probably will move back into the alpha spot and take the majority of everything, but you know, I could definitely see Ibrahim pushing and stealing some of Brooks's carries maybe, but I mean, the one game we saw from Shannon Brooks last year, he was electric once he, you know, as long as he hung on to the football. But I mean, running, nobody on the Gopher roster could run like he could when he was healthy. So I think we're just going to have an absolute, you know, group of incredibly talented people at that spot, and PJ's just going to have to pick and choose how he wants to use them.
The other thing that'll be interesting for fall camp, assuming that everyone is healthy, and I will admit to being wildly skeptical that that will be true for Shannon Brooks, but if everyone is healthy, Rodney Smith gives you a pass-catching threat. They didn't really ever show that with Brooks, and not a lot with Ibrahim. If Ibrahim's developed an ability to really do the screen game well, then I would actually say he's cemented, in my view, as the second person. And then Brooks is kind of your absolute power back. Like, I need to get 3 yards on this play because it's very difficult to tackle him. He can always break one. But I think especially with the injuries that Brooks has suffered, it would seem odd that he would be getting anywhere near the majority of the carries. Also, Bryce Williams is not a bad four-string running back either. This is a very pleasant problem to have.
It is an excellent problem to have. Defensively, Strihu, like, what did you love most about what you saw defensively?
Boye Mafe looks like he might be a legitimate defensive end. A little bit is hard to tell because he was going against Sam Schluter and Jason Dixon a lot. That might say something about how we feel about our left tackle position. But he had a really good bowl game, seems to have continued that, put on good strength and size, appears to be picking up some more moves, and is really, really fast. So that was exciting. Carter Coughlin remains also a really excellent rush end, but is, you know, moving more back to kind of a linebacker position. I would suspect, and we've heard this, that the defense is going to look weird all the time. So it might be a 4-3, a 3-4, a 4-2-5. Whatever they're basing might be a purely matchup personnel. I would be surprised if it doesn't look a lot like a 4-3. And on passing downs, I would be particularly surprised if it wasn't Boye Mafe on one side and Carter Coughlin on the other side on the ends. So that I think was a positive. Thomas Rush had a solid spring game, which is good because you need more help at the linebacker position. Thomas Barber played very sparingly, and when he did, he was excellent. I expect him to have a really good senior season. The defensive backs, I think, are still an open question. There's a lot of competition at those spots, plus fall camp coming in. It would be very nice if somebody won the safety spot outside off Antoine Winfield very quickly. That would be the one thing that I would look for in fall camp.
Andy, what was your big takeaway or takeaways from watching the defense?
Yeah, you know, I think as Alex said, Mafe is really somebody who sort of stood out, and everything we've been hearing from campus, he's had a really good spring, and he's sort of cementing himself as that other side defensive end, along with, you know, whether Coughlin's there or whether it's Oconee or somebody else. You know, defensive line is going to be interesting. None of our new D tackles really stood out in the spring game. Now, not that that means anything, but you know, you didn't see any flashes from the Cheneys or from the Dutredaway or anybody like that. So, I think that'll be something to watch early, is to see if we have anybody who wants to really stand out in that D tackle spot and earn that time. You know, as we said, our linebackers are going to be good. You're playing the same group of linebackers that you've had for a while, minus Cashman, who is all of a sudden looking like he might be taken in the third or fourth round of the NFL draft, which if you had said that a year ago, I think we all would have laughed in your face. But, you know, you've got Barber, you've got Kamal Martin, you've got Coughlin, and we saw Thomas Rush is looking like he'll be able to fill in really well. Braylon Oliver, while not flashing during the spring game, sounds like he's starting to figure out things. And so, you know, you lose that senior group after this year, but it sounds like between Sorio Martin and Oliver and Rush, we've got a good group ready to step in and take those spots. And then the secondary, you know, as long as Antoine Winfield stays healthy, you've got one anchor. I think it's going to be an interesting competition for both the corner and that other safety spot. Coney Durr's in the mix. Chris Williamson's in the mix. Terrell Smith probably will see most of the playing time on one side. That safety spot between Howden and Benny Sapp, as Street said, it'd be nice to get things figured out, pretty quick into fall camp so that you've got a good solid normal rotation when you start playing games. But, you know, all in all, I think we saw quite a few positives this weekend, and I think we feel pretty good about things looking up for this fall, and now we just need everybody to try and stay healthy, and if we can get our first teamers on the field for a majority of the 12 games of the season, I'm feeling pretty excited about this fall.
Is the new practice facility more important for recruiting, or the fact that we actually have something we can film a spring game in when the weather turns sour? Because there's no way they would have been able to do this whole, like, BTN comes and films in that old facility.
I mean, I'll still say it's the recruiting. You know, in this climate, you need to have a good winter facility, and it's rather impressive. I mean, as somebody who's been in there a couple of times, it's really, really impressive facility. But you're exactly right. Had they still been in the old indoor facility, it would have been interesting to see what exactly would have happened with the spring game. Because there's no way you're letting cameras in that old facility. And you know, it while it was a okay 40-degree cloudy day on Saturday, there still would have been plenty of snow out there, and I'm sure there were in the seats and the bleachers at TCF. So it would have been a big time mess. But luckily, they didn't have to make that decision.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, moving to basketball. Street, was the extension of Richard Pitino a great move or a terrible move?
I suppose if it's that binary, I guess it was a great move.
All right. What do you think of the extension of Richard Pitino?
The primary thing that I think about the extension is that the buyout got drastically reduced for both sides, which is the thing that actually mattered. People seem to forget Pitino wasn't going anywhere next year. It wasn't like if he wasn't extended that everything was terrible. He had a contract for another 3 years. So this just puts two more on top. But the negotiating contract reduces the buyout substantially on the University of Minnesota side, and also for Pitino as well. And I think you want to be in a situation where both sides can move on if they don't want to. So that's the first thing. So that from a contractual perspective. Secondly, while I find it ludicrous to believe that recruits and their families, especially top recruits in this day and age, aren't able to think even slightly rationally about the lunacy that is contract extensions when coaches get fired all the time or coaches move all the time without a problem. Having those extra 2 years does also mean that any recruit for this cycle and the next cycle, should they stay all 4 years, will have Richard Pitino as their head coach in this magical world where nothing changes over the next 4 years. So that, I think, is a positive as well. The third bit, which seems to be true, is that the extension got done and none of the assistants have moved. Now, obviously, the spring isn't over yet. Certainly, you could see movement happening. But if all three assistants stay and Pitino stays, I think that's particularly important because you need continuity in recruiting, particularly from a relationship building standpoint. I also think Ed Conroy, Rob Jeter, and Kyle Linstead seem to complement each other pretty well on the assistant side of the house. All of that was positive. Negatives is it's unclear to me why it took so long to get this extension. And what I mean by that is there isn't really any actual movement that occurred from the end of the tournament, or really for that matter, the end of the Big Ten tournament and when the extension was finally signed. Now, I'm sure there's hardball back and forth. I imagine both sides are looking for outside options. There are a variety of things that may happen in a negotiation. But if the presumption is that Mark Coyle liked Richard Pitino and was going to continue to keep Richard Pitino around and they had this relationship, it would have been much more helpful, I think, for all involved if the extension had at least been announced during the NCAA tournament. Much less perhaps immediately after, as opposed to when it was. So that part of the extension, I think, was negative. Mostly that's a news cycle, so it's actually water under the bridge. Doesn't seem to have affected the ability to get Sam Freeman to come, and it doesn't seem like the loss of Grant Shurfield to Wichita State had really anything to do with Pitino's situation one way or the other. But I do think that that was a talking point that probably could have been avoided by both sides.
Andy, what was your big takeaway from the extension?
Yeah, you know, it sort of is it's one of those things, and you don't know exactly how far the gossip's traveling. I mean, if you're one of us who's into the following the gossip and things like that, there was some rumors that Pitino was maybe flirting with the Arkansas job, and or whether he was using that as bargaining leverage or something like that. And you know, I agree with Street on that one. Is that, you know, if they wanted to get it done, they could have got it done earlier and announced it and avoided that whole thing. But how much does that really go to the general public and the recruits and things like that, or is it just the people that follow the message boards and look at that, you know? So it may not have nearly the effect that some people may think it may have, but, you know, Pitino's in for another couple of years. The buyout stays relatively stable, so that's good. You know, the question will be is what can he do? He's got to finish this recruiting cycle relatively strong, which we'll get to in a minute here. And, you know, the best thing for his possible outcome that could happen is that Amir Coffey decides to return next season and not sign a professional contract. I mean, we all pretty much realize that he's probably not going to get drafted at this moment in time, so it's the question of whether he decides to sign a two-way deal or whether he decides to come back to school. But this team will be drastically less potent if he is not on this roster come October. So that may or may make or break the way that Pitino's 10 years looked at. If he comes back and he can get the Gophers back to the NCAA tournament again next season, then this extension will be looked favorably. If the Gophers take a step back and don't make another trip to the tournament, I think you're going to hear a lot of grumbling, just like you had from Teague or Maturi when they gave out some of these extensions that weren't really warranted, and it'll be the same old argument of, oh, the U of M's on the hook again for they gave the extension and all of a sudden things went poorly and things like that. So I think next season will really be a make or break year for the public face of this extension.
Well, unless I'm wrong, if they were to fire him after next year, they actually owe him less money than they would have under the old contract. Am I wrong about that?
You are not wrong on that. How much less they owe him is a bit of an open question, but I think it is certainly the case that if Pitino's buyout had been substantially less than it was, that Mark Coyle probably would have kicked the tires unless he really liked him. You can actually see this argument going the other way, incidentally, with Rick Barnes, the UCLA Tennessee situation, where Rick Barnes's buyout is so high that UCLA doesn't end up moving. I think that's why I think part of what's good about this contract is the buyout's reduced on both sides. I don't, as someone who thinks that player movement should be free and the coaches should move if they don't like something and all those other things, if someone wants to pay it, I think it's helpful to have both sides moving. But yeah, unquestionably, this is a more favorable buyout structure for the University of Minnesota than it was under the old contract.
All right, well, I'm going to just put my marker down now then and say anybody who's complaining about this extension, if they fire Pitino or if Pitino struggles and there's talk of him being fired, is either A, an idiot, or B, one disingenuous motherfucker.
Looks like we're going to have to put that explicit tag on.
I was just going to say, and Now I feel even worse, asshole.
All right, well, recruiting. Do we want to start with, like the caring is creepy recruiting or the we want to steal your grad transfer recruiting?
I mean, both are creepy, but at least one is of people who are, you know, adults. I think if you look at it, the actual commitment news is that Sam Freeman, who is a high schooler out of Texas, committed. He's probably going to be a backup five, appears to have gained a lot of weight, so is now up to about 230, 6'10". Highlight video makes him look quite athletic. If you're looking for, like, what is your most optimistic scenario for Sam Freeman, you're looking at a potentially less skilled Daniel Otero, which is not a bad thing to back up actual Daniel Otero. So that's positive. They are also looking at a couple of grad transfers, and by a couple, I mean literally every grad transfer they seem to be calling. But the two that they are pursuing perhaps more heavily than others, one of which is a power forward out of Drexel, who averaged about 15 points, back to the basket, four man, pretty big, seems to be a decent rebounder, not necessarily the greatest defender, but that would allow you to actually have some solid mass, if nothing else, at the power forward position. And then with the loss of the recruiting battle for Grant Sherfield, who may have been a two, but probably would have been looking like a one at the college level, or certainly a combo guard, the Gophers are very much in need of at least a grad transfer to back up the point guard position. The other recruit, as Andy mentioned, that is perhaps the biggest recruit for the spring is, will Amir Coffey return? Because if Amir Coffey does return, your starting five looks like a tournament team. And Trey Williams has blown up as a recruit, so that's a solid someone off the bench, as well as Peyton Willis. And then if you picked up this Drexel kid, you would actually have some depth at the four position. That's a pretty good team in and of itself. They're also trying to get a kid out of Germany who I believe his name is Isaiah Innen, but it's a name that I'm not going to pretend to be saying correctly until he actually commits and I find a pronunciation guide. So apologies. All right. Who seems to be sort of a wing, but 6'9", had interest from a lot of teams. It seems right now to be between down Minnesota and TCU. This would be the caring is creepy section of the recruiting fish. But I think he would be definitely a certainly 3-4 year player, has a lot of skills. The sort of upside for him is perhaps a less skilled Amir Coffey, and the downside for him is Charles Bugs, which if he shows up for one game against Iowa, maybe that's fine.
Would certainly help me out. Andy, like, I don't know, how are you feeling about recruiting? Because the general take I'm hearing from people is underwhelmed.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't claim to be an expert when it comes to basketball recruiting, but you know, the Trey Williams commit obviously is huge, and Sam Freeman, you know, it was down to Minnesota, Virginia Tech, and all of a sudden you had Buzz Williams leaving Virginia Tech, so that definitely gave the Gophers a big advantage there. You know, Sherfield picking Wichita State over Minnesota, you know, that one you feel a little bit worse about, especially considering his high school coach is on the Gophers staff. There were three relatively highly rated players from Sunrise Academy in Wichita that Kyle Lingblatt was their coach for several years, and then has now been on the Gophers staff for a year, and none of them ended up picking Minnesota. Actually, one of them picked Minnesota and then decommitted and then went to Missouri instead. But, you know, I think there's still plenty of time to close out the class and find some sign some players are going to play a big role for the Gophers in the next year or two. You know, you don't fully expect Minnesota to be in on some of these major transfers coming out, but you look at like, you know, you got the Hauser brothers from Marquette who decided they were going to transfer. Marquette's second and third leading scorer. There was some steam that Wisconsin might have a chance, or maybe Virginia because they're from Stevens Point, and the Bennett family is obviously very connected in Stevens Point. Now it sounds like Michigan State might be the leader. Of course, the rich just getting richer as they can have two kids who average double figures as a junior, as a freshman, sit out a year, and all of a sudden Michigan State's fully loaded again in 2020, which is just, you know, whatever. But, you know, it'd be nice to see Minnesota try and get a big impact guy. This this kid from Drexel sounds like he's, you know, he's not going to be a Jordan Murphy-esque, you know, double-double machine, but at least he can give you some heft in the post and can, you know, score a few baskets and get a few rebounds for you. But, you know, I as I said, you know, I think this is going to be a really big year for Richard Pitino and public opinion towards him and towards this contract extension. And so he really would be beneficial for everybody to try and find one or two more big pieces here before the recruiting season closes and can really make at least some type of impact on the court next fall.
All right, transitioning to softball. The last time we talked about softball, they had the program record high for RPI, I believe 8. I know the concern has always been you get that program high RPI and then you play the Big Ten slate and things start to take a nosedive. Andy, how are things looking on the rankings front for softball?
Well, so far so good. The Gophers dropped. They're now number 9 in the most recent RPI that came out on Sunday. But that's actually fairly a positive situation considering the Gophers ended up sweeping Michigan State in a doubleheader on Sunday. They only played 2 of the scheduled 3 games this weekend due to our weather apocalypse that happened towards the end of last week. Which is both a positive and a negative. A positive in the fact that Michigan State had the worst RPI of any team in the Big Ten, and so you're not damaged by having to play a third game against that team and have your RPI potentially drop due to strength of schedule issues. The negative being now the Gophers are 1 game back in games played in the Big Ten standings. Northwestern leads the conference at 12-0. Michigan's 11-1. The Gophers are 10-1. And if it becomes, you know, if it comes down to the end of the year and say Northwestern drops off and Michigan and Minnesota end up tied with 1 loss, if Michigan ends up playing that 1 extra game, they would be the Big Ten regular season crown winners due to winning percentage. So in some ways, that's a downfall for the Gophers if you want to see them win another regular season Big Ten championship. But RPI wise, it sort of is a positive. You know, it like I said, they're still playing well. Amber Pfizer, their ace, is she picked up wins in both games, starting one and the other one in relief on Sunday. But she's really their only pitcher they can trust right now. Sydney Smith is another senior pitcher, but she got roughed up by Michigan State in the couple innings she pitched on Sunday. So the Gophers are sitting sort of where they are. Is they could win a Big Ten title and they could get a decent spot in the NCAA tournament, but if you've only got one pitcher you can trust going into a double elimination tournament, you're going to have to steal one somewhere because you can't throw Pfizer every single game. And so the bats are going to have to come alive. That's one positive is all of a sudden Minnesota's hitting the ball insane. McKenna Partain was named the Big Ten Player of the Week this week. She went 6-for-7 on the weekend, 3 doubles, a triple, a home run, knocked in 4 runs, added a pair of stolen bases. It's not a bad doubleheader right there. She leads the Big Ten in runs per game, 1.1, and and in triples on the year. So, you know, you got Partain at hitting the ball at a potential Big Ten Player of the Year rate. You've got Fizer throwing at a potentially Big Ten Pitcher of the Year rate. So things are going well for the Gophers in conference. It's just going to be, can they get over that hump and see what they can do when we get to the tournament that matters here later in May.
All right, so this is normally where I, you know, share some failure with the deliciousness that is HelloFresh, but I'm actually going to highlight one of the selling points of HelloFresh, which is when you get really busy slash lazy slash ordering out a lot, you can actually pause your HelloFresh on a weekly basis so they don't send you anything, and then you don't have to feel bad about failing to cook it properly. It just doesn't arrive.
Note, we are still not sponsored by HelloFresh.
And that's completely shocking, given that I'm now talking about how you can avoid paying them money. I can't imagine why they haven't sponsored us yet. So, just in case you're wondering, you can pause your HelloFresh subscription through their very convenient app, which I'm actually serious. It's actually a nice app. So, don't think this is all like a joking bit. The app is actually quality. And on that, you know, exciting note that we're still not sponsored by HelloFresh. Go Gophers. Skyuma. Row the boat.